It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. And we're live here on a weekend that is about as rainy and wet as I can remember. And it looks like some of that will continue today. Isolated thunderstorms this morning, mainly cloudy with thunderstorms likely. A few storms may be severe, high 67, low tonight 49. If you're headed down to the Georgia Dome, obviously you're going to wear your parka, your rain jacket, or if you're tailgating, maybe you're tailgating underneath one of those big parking deck venues with the old industrial train that comes through. It looks a lot like being next to a Russian prison. That's the only thing that I can... That's what I think when I'm down there. Anyway, I'll be down there today playing football. I'm taking my two older sons who just found out listening to the show that we're all going to the Falcons game. So that's exciting for a couple of the Moss boys. And I'm excited too. I'm very excited. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. By the way, that's weather brought to you by Shoemate, our friends at Shoemate. So good morning. We've been talking about the things we know about Trump. That was the first hour. Now we're going to talk about, and a very quick recap on that. We know that his policies are not just straight down the fairway. He's beholden to no one. Yes, he's Republican, but there's a little bit of blue in what is an overall red flag for Trump, at least as far as I can tell. We've got the fact that, and I think this is the most important of all of these. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Number two, Trump won over middle class, and he did that by slamming big everything. He's not afraid to do that. Three, he is a master communicator. When it comes to his Twitter following, which is 14 million now on his new POTUS handle on Twitter, and 20 million on the real Donald Trump, which is also on Twitter, he has got this massive audience. It's, think of 400 full stadiums of people that he can communicate to. Imagine how that influences the legislative process. Massive. Number four, there's this disbelief that he'll get anything done, because remember, still half the country, slightly more than half the country, they don't like Trump. This also goes back to, I think, a very important point about those who support Trump or do not support Trump. The group that doesn't like him, they take him very literally. Every little word he says, oh, he's going to do this crazy thing, they don't take him seriously. The other half takes him seriously, but not literally. He's not going to stop all immigration in the world. He's not going to go to war with the rest of the world. He's not going to ban trade, and he's not going to put a tariff on everything coming into the country. He's negotiating and starting the process to change things in America. So that fact that he's a master communicator, and then there's a disbelief on a big chunk of America, which, oh, by the way, half of those people are also investors, or more than half, then that's going to be an interesting market dynamic for a long time. Number five, I don't think lobbying, or the impact of lobbying, goes away completely. It just changes, even under a Trump administration. But number six, and I think most importantly, that Trump is a dad and a granddad. He's got five kids, eight grandchildren. And the point there is that, just like any other father, he has this, and I think it's a very genuine, real sense of protection for the family, or this nurture of, when you're a dad or a father, you do not want a messy country. You do not want an environment for your kids to grow up in that is dangerous or reckless. And as much as Trump detractors think he is dangerous or reckless, ultimately he's not going to be, because he is a father, and I spent obviously plenty of time with him over the years. I get that genuine sense, and that might not come through in these big speeches, and it might not come through in these rallies, but I think behind closed doors, that's a very real dynamic that he shares. So with that, let's talk about the market, and let's talk about where we stand as this market is butting up against an all-time high and a period of to some extent, all-time uncertainty. Those two are clashing, and it makes for a nervous environment. And that's part of the reason the market's been, for the most part, stalled out in the last several weeks. And we haven't really plowed new ground. With that, also, I want to take your calls and questions. So that's the fun part about Money Matters, whether you're headed to brunch this morning, or maybe you've just finished up church or headed to church. We'd love to take your call here this morning. So phone lines open. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Ryan Ely with me here every Sunday morning and has been for almost 10 years. We're in almost our ninth year of Money Matters here on WSB Radio. But he's here to take your calls and questions and then pass them through. Sometimes he'll just answer your question and he never even lets me talk to you. So sometimes he knows just as much about all of this as I do. We've been working together for a very long time. And so give us a call here in the studio. The number again, 404-872-0750. Phone lines open. And it may be that this is really your place for answers. And the fun part is helping you just in real time. At least we'll give you our opinion and I'll give you some direction. And you can take with that for what it's worth. And maybe it's just a tiebreaker. A lot of these financial conversations are just tiebreakers between husband and wife. Honey, we should do this. No, honey, we should do that. We should sell the lake house and we should move to the coast. We should stay in our house. No, I love this house. No, but I want to renovate this house. Well, the kitchen's going to cost $50,000. What? I don't want to do that. So that's this dynamic back and forth. And a lot of times our question, what I'll do here is maybe just be a tiebreaker and help one side tip the conversation one way or the other in the most objective way humanly possible. Maybe you're just in charge of new money and you're the trustee or the executor and you're trying to figure out, hey, where do we go from here in this environment? Maybe you're 58 and you're closer to retirement now and you're wondering, hey, I've got all these stock funds and international. Should I own bonds? Should I have a bond ladder or a fund or an ETF? What do I do for the next 4 years? That's what we'll try to help you with here this morning. So the number here, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to start with Michael, who joins us from Johns Creek. Michael, what's up? Good morning.
Greetings, Wes.
Greetings.
Good morning. How's everything?
Good. Are you going to the Falcons game?
No. No, I won't be a Falcons enjoyer at the game, but I'll watch it on TV. It'll be fun to see.
It's a better economic way to do it, so I applaud you. I applaud you for that. Clark Howard would applaud you for that. But I'm looking at it as an experience. And by the way, probably the most popular article that I've published in the last couple of weeks has been about spending our money on experiences over goods. And that has gotten, and Americans have shifted that way pretty dramatically, where we're spending more and more on experiences rather than goods. So I'm off track here, Michael. This call is about you, and how can we help? What's going on?
Well, you were talking about ages and the upcoming stock market. Where should we put our money? My situation is that I'm 70, though my mother just turned 104. And
my father lived to
95. So from my point of view, my genetic makeup suggests that I have anywhere from 25 to 35 years for my money to work for me. And at the same time, it's been, 30 years or more now since we've been in a interest rate environment with interest rates going down. But for the next 10 to plus years, we're going to see interest rates rising. So is that whole business of 70% bonds and 30% stock market, should that now be turned around, or should I just totally ignore bonds since
they're
not going to do so well in a rising interest rate?
What a rule of thumb that has, I would say, it dies hard, meaning that it won't go away. So many years, and this, you remember this from probably John Bogle back in the day, the founder of Vanguard, used to say that if you own your age in bonds, you're 50, own 50% in bonds, 60, in your case, 70, you're young sounding 70. Yeah, you're getting to 104. I like this, Michael. But, and I know that if you're listening, it's kind of heartwarming to hear that. Mom's 104. So I love that you're planning for a long time. And that has been a message that I've had for so many years is that, yeah, just because you're 70 doesn't mean you don't have a long time horizon, right? Even if you live to 85, That's still 15 years. So we get this, I think, false sense that I'm 70 and I don't have any more time, Wes. Well, really what you mean is that you don't have quite as much time to make up for big losses if you really need your money in current form. And that does change the dynamic. So Bogle said a long time ago, own your agent bonds, and it worked very well. And I've said that in the earlier years of Money Matters. I said, look, own your agent bonds, because we were still in that environment of rates down, bond prices up. It was a tailwind. It was good for bond investors. Now, to your point, we're going the other way. We've bottomed out in rates last summer at 1.4 on the 10-year treasury. Today, it's more like 2.5, and the foreseeable future is higher from there. So to your point, now that rates are going up, it's a headwind for your bonds and my bonds. For many years now, at least 4 or 5 years, I've said that own your agent bonds is antiquated. I don't believe that mantra anymore at all. And it's because the facts and the patterns over the next 10, 20 years have changed. Their rates are no longer going down. They're going to continue. Right. They're going to probably stay flat to go up. So I want you and all listeners out there to throw away own your agent bonds. It was right for a long time. I don't think it's right for the next 10 years. When you're 70, you do not need to have 70% in bonds. Now, I tried to modify that, and I've said own your agent income, which is a little more confusing, quite frankly. Own your agent bonds is simple. Oh, 70%, 70 years old, 70% bonds. Income is a broader category because I can get income from dividends. I get stock dividends, bond interest still, distributions from MLPs and REITs. I would like to see you own your agent income, Michael. Some of that can be bonds still, but I also want to get your income from a more diverse way. We've got to do quick news, weather, traffic. Then we're going to come back. We'll have another 2 minutes to end up and finish your call here. So hang on the line, Michael. This is important. More Money Matters with Michael from Johns Creek straight ahead.
Here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. Michael joins us from Johns Creek. Michael, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
And yeah. Own your age in bonds, I guess for some reason, has been etched into the minds of American investors. It's probably because it started with John Bogle back in the 80s or 90s. I've talked about it for many years on the radio. And Michael here is 70, and Michael's mom is how old?
She just turned 104.
How is she? Is she good? Is she mentally
doing okay?
Pretty good.
Yeah, she lives on her own in an apartment. It's just been 18 months ago that we got it moved out of her house that she lived in.
Still driving to Kroger back and forth. Maybe not. Now, okay. So let me. So you. But the point here of this is that you've got a. This says you. My goodness. I might go to 104. I've got 25, 35 years left. So even though you're 70, and all of you listening that you're 60 or 70, you got a long horizon ahead of you. Just because you're about to retire doesn't mean you pack it up and just go to CDs and bonds.
And
so,
you know, aren't there more and more of these financial advisors going to computers where the computer models are still emphasizing this business of holding so much bond stuff?
A lot of the algorithms that I see based on whether it's a digital advisory firm or a robo firm or even financial planning software, they still have these models that say, yeah, they're based on those old adages, number one. And number two, they're based on a bond market that averaged 7-8% a year, which is not going to happen in the next 10 years. So here's, I think, how to make this simple. Number one, you've got to remember that it's not your age, Michael, that you're investing for. So you don't think of yourself, oh, because I'm 70, I invest like this. It is your horizon that matters, not your age. Right. So yes, you've got 20, 30 years. So you can be an investor that has a balance that has an equity exposure. To make this simple, I go back to my Benjamin Graham rule, who was really the teacher of Warren Buffett. I talked about this in the book, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, that no matter how old you are, you should have at least, let's call this at least 50% in the stock market. And I think that applies here to you, and I think it's a really good rule of thumb for most investors. If you're really if you're really nervous about fluctuation or up and down movements in your portfolio, that may be too heavy exposure, too much. But for most of us, I think whether you're 70 or even 80, let's call it a good rule of thumb. Let's start establishing a new rule of thumb, Michael, that no matter how old you are, as long as you have 10 years or more of horizon, which matters, you should have 50%, at least 50% in the equity markets, in stocks. I would prefer them to be dividend payers. I'm a believer, take this and make it a little more complicated. Instead of own your age in bonds, make it own your age in income. And if it were up to me, most 100% of your portfolio would be generating some sort of income. So you can still own stock.
Yeah, I like the idea of reinvesting in a dividend.
Exactly. So you don't need to reinvest your dividends anymore. You're now living on the dividends. So you want to own companies that have a yield of 2% to 4 or 4.5%. Remember, the S&P 500 yields around 1.5 to 1.7. So you have to look for companies that are in the 2.5 and 3.5 and 4% dividend per year range, which is something that is very possible to do. So as of today, because of your call, Michael, thank you, by the way, and have a great rest of your Sunday. We're going to start establishing and changing this, what has been etched in stone. We're going to figure out investing for your horizon, not your age. Stay tuned. More Money Matters right here on WSB, straight ahead. Welcome back to an inauguration weekend edition of Money Matters here. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It is Falcons playoff Sunday, of course. Right after the show, I'm taking my two older boys down to the Georgia Dome. We'll play some football down there at some tailgates. And then we'll go into the stadium, and it's exciting. Still don't know how I'm going to get down there, or whether it's a MARTA maybe, or the Uber or something. I don't know, but either way, we'll be wearing our ponchos. And by the way, the weather, isolated thunderstorms throughout the day, showers, of course, likely intermittently, high 76, low 49 tonight. So with that, we're back to the phones here. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We just had, a really important call that is going to continue to be a theme over the next several months and maybe this entire year. And that's as we go through these large historical patterns or shifts in stock market, bond market, commodity market, and real estate market. But the three first I mentioned are publicly traded. So that's as we invest in our 401ks or our IRAs or investment accounts. Those are the three we most focus on: stock market, bond market, commodities. It's important to understand the cycles. And the question came from Johns Creek, and it said, look, as rates are going up, what do I do with the bond side of the equation? I remember, Wes, own your age in bonds. I'm 70. Should I own 70% in bonds? That doesn't hold anymore. That is an old adage that lasted and worked for 30 years as there was a tailwind for bonds. Now there's a headwind. Doesn't mean that bonds still aren't important. It doesn't mean that there aren't various bond categories that still don't work and won't work. It just means that the adage of just stick your money in intermediate and long-term bonds as a percentage, whatever your age is, that doesn't work anymore. That's over. And it's been over for a couple of years now, but it's a little more complicated than tying a percentage on your age in bonds to how much you should have as a percentage of bonds. That was easy. Now we are thinking a little, our thinking has evolved on that, and it's own your age in income. And income comes from many places, not just bonds. So I want you to remember and understand and focus on not your age as a percentage of what asset class you should have, but invest for your horizon. How much time do you have? So if you're 70, it doesn't mean you have a short horizon anymore. If you're 75, you might have another 25 years left to invest. So I want you to invest for your horizon, not your age. And if you have 10 years plus, then yes, I go back to my Benjamin Graham rule, who, by the way, was Warren Buffett's teacher, that even if you are, whether you're 30 or 40 or 70 or 80 or 90, it still makes sense to have at least 50% in stocks. We can vary the kind of stocks we own. We can have very growth-oriented, riskier stocks, or we can shift over time to more stable, mature companies that are more dividend-oriented. Again, what we've talked about for years and years now, money matters. And that has worked very well over the last several years, over the last 8 years. And I think it will continue to work very well over the next 10 years. And that goes back into where we stand as an economy. And I want to get to that here in today's show still. But those are the dynamics we're working with. So no longer is it invest own your age in bonds. It is invest for your horizon, not your age. 50% in stocks, depending, no matter what your age is, if you can take on some risk and have a moderate risk tolerance for fluctuation, you should have at least 50% in the equity side of the market. Again, let's go to the phones here, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, by the way, you can go to my website, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. There's an email button that comes straight to me, Ryan, and our Money Matters team. Or you can go to yourwealth.com and find us as well to answer these same questions that we're taking here on the air. Dave joins us. Again, it looks like for another Johns Creek caller. Dave, good morning. What's up? How can I help?
Yes, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. My question centers around my son is going to college in the coming year. Just wanting to hear what you have.
Scary, Dave. It's scary, isn't it? You almost sound scared, and I don't blame you. It's like, oh gosh, yes. We've got college coming up. How many kids do you have, by the way?
Two-part question. One, I'd like to increase my liquidity per month. Right now, I've got a $2,500 mortgage. I'd like to take that down to $1,700. The second part would be financing the college experience. I had thought about a line of credit. That's probably not what I'm going to do right now, but I just want to see where your mind is at. And outside of, fortunately, he was able to get a scholarship.
How much are we talking, Dave? So how much do you think is going to be the all-in spend each year?
For the college experience or what?
For the college experience, the whole thing. Yeah. Tuition, room and board, living, food, beer money.
Well, he can take care of that. What I'm going to pay, he was given a scholarship for tuition, and the room and board is on the table. So roughly between $5,000 and $10,000 a year.
Total? That's all that's going to have to come out of your pocket or somebody's pocket?
Correct.
Well, let's go to the high side of that. Let's say it's $10,000. And let me go back to your other part of the question though. You were asking about you've got a mortgage that's $2,500 a month and you want to bring that down to $1,700 a month. What, tell me about that dynamic first.
We refinanced the house from a 30-year fixed to a 15, and with that brought in an addition to the back part of the house. So included that sum of money into the refinance, and that's really the reason why it's, to me, so large. And why I want to get it down is obviously for the next year's experience, just trying to, take into consideration possible additional college expenses. But
so your total mortgage is you're on a 15 though now. You have a 15-year mortgage.
Correct. I currently have 12 years to pay on it.
Got it. Okay. And that's why it went up. It was $1,700. Now it's $2,500 a month.
Well, it was $1,400 and it went up to $2,500 a month. Yes.
All right. Well, that's a really good. And how old are you, by the way, Dave?
Well, 50.
So if you just stay on schedule with that, then you're at 62, you're mortgage-free, which is a big deal.
And that's really the impetus why I did that. Yes, correct.
And that is super smart. And I know it's a little tighter in the budget because now your payment's higher because it's being done over a much shorter period of time. But it's a very smart thing that you're doing. So I think that part of it you don't want to change or modify. On the college end here, because you obviously have your child's an achiever in some way, shape, or form. Let's call it 10. You said 5 to 10. Let's call it 10. My thought here, and this is whether it's 10,000 a year or 50, how I usually see, and I go back to the what happens in the real world, not financial planner 101 says, oh, you've got to save 300 grand per child. Do I ever see that done? Yeah, I'd say 1% of the time. The other 99% of the time, most families don't have 300 grand per child that they really saved. It just doesn't happen for most people. What happens for most folks is that they do a combination of how it gets paid. Again, whether it's 10 grand or 50 grand per year, it's still a significant amount of money. And how I see it typically get done is in thirds. So a third typically comes in the form of college savings. So yes, let's say we've saved some money for a third of that cost. In your case, it'd be $3,300. The other third comes from your current earnings. So you are spending, you're still working, and this is why most people don't retire until their kids are done college. Hey, I'm going to take another third of that annual budget out of cash flow. So the third of it comes from you. And a third of it then either comes in a form of a loan or the child working while they're in college, whether you take on the loan or they take on the loan. That's a very prudent way to break up this equation. So for you, if you break it up into that, into thirds, and let's call it $3,333, in your case, out of your own cash flow, it's only $275 a month. So can you afford that, number one? And number two, and I bet you can, and the third area here, besides the savings part, is that are you okay with either your son getting a loan or you taking on a little bit of a college loan? Are you okay with that, or do you guys have enough other savings to just take care of the rest?
No, I know it's a great point, and I do have enough money for the $275 or so per month. I think that's a great strategy to do those three things. And I actually have thought, in talking with a neighbor, to maybe co-sign on the student loan. I don't know.
Wait a minute. Your neighbor's not going to co-sign, right?
No.
I'm just kidding. I know.
Thank you. No.
I love that neighbor. Hey, guys, if you need me to co-sign for your kids, let's just talk. No, I'm with you. So again, if you break it up in those thirds, it all becomes a heck of a lot easier. And you read about college savings, you hear, oh, when your kid's born, you get them a 529 plan. How often does that happen? Not that often. And do we save 300 grand per child to go to the University of Pennsylvania or University of Michigan for 50 grand a year? Not really. In the real world, we've got to break this down in more edible chunks and palatable portions. And you're starting at a great level here where your son has some pretty significant scholarship money. So you're going to be able to afford this. So to have a little bit of for you to co-sign on a loan that let's call it 3 grand a year over 4 years is 12 grand. He gets out of school, he pays off 12 grand. It's not that big of a burden. Number one. Number two, he's got skin in the game, which we like as parents, right?
Absolutely.
And worst case scenario, you pay it off, which would have actually defeated the purpose. But it's palatable for you. And I think that is a logical way for you as a parent to go forth and conquer a college education. And even when child number two goes, same thing applies. We got to run here, but thank you for the call, Dave. And hopefully today was helpful. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. It is inaugural Sunday. And we're going to get a quick break. We've got a little bit of time in our next segment. I still want to go back to kind of where we are in the world. Do stocks make sense? I'll give you a couple important points about that. If you didn't get a chance to listen to all Money Matters today, you can always go to iTunes. You just subscribe to Wes Moss Money Matters. Again, look up Wes Moss Money Matters, WESMOSS Money Matters. Those they'll get automatically downloaded to your iPhone or your Samsung, or go to wesmoss.com under the radio tab. You can also send emails to me and the Money Matters team about either getting together, trying to answer some of your current questions or your investment challenges. We'll try to help you through. You can go to my website, wesmoss.com. Those emails come straight to me. More Money Matters right here on WSB, straight ahead.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. A lot to cover in a short period of time. Remember, we've got this market butting up against an all-time high. is it still, does it still make sense to buy stocks? I'm going to give you five quick reasons why stocks at least still make sense over the next year. Not to say they're not going to be choppy, not going to say it's going to be a perfect year at all. But here are my thoughts over the next year. Number one, remember, the large mega cycles for stocks and bonds and commodities, out of those three cycles, stocks are still in the most favorable part of a long-term trend. I continue to believe we're in a secular bull market, which means long-term. And we're starting to see signs of improvement in corporate earnings and big picture economic growth or GDP. Number two, stocks are still more attractive from an earnings perspective, what you earn year to year relative to bonds. Number three, stock earnings, though, are also finally on the rise after stalling out for the better part of 2 years. Number four, higher interest rates, as they do go up, are a long way away from putting a real dent into stocks or the economy for that matter. Over the last 60 years, stocks still have a positive correlation with interest rates, up to 4% on the 10-year treasury. More simply put, stocks rise along with interest rates going up historically all the way until we get over 4% on the 10-year treasury. And today we're only at 2.5%. So we have a long way to go up in rates before they hurt stocks. Five, corporate taxes, as they go lower under a Trump administration, that will automatically help earnings per share. Ryan Ely, price back.
The McDonald's weekend price back is a four-pack of tickets to the Great American Motorcycle Show, January 28th through the 29th at the Cobb Galleria Center, and a four-pack of tickets to Clark Howard Night at the Atlanta Gladiators game on February 4th at the Infinite Energy Arena. This week's trivia question: the Falcons last played in a Super Bowl in 1998. That Super Bowl was in Miami. None of the Falcons players would end up in the Hall of Fame from that team, despite being pretty impressive. Can you tell me which team beat the Falcons in 1998? Pretty simple, pretty straightforward, but there were two Hall of Famers on that team who beat the Falcons.
And you insta-chatted me, on Snapface recently about
FaceGram?
Super Bowl tickets. How much are we talking?
$3,199 right now for an upper deck seat to the Super Bowl in Houston. Maybe not the best investment. If the Steelers go, I'm going to have to find a way, but I might have to call some favors.
So you're looking Steelers-Falcons.
Steelers-Falcons would be unbelievable.
Well, enjoy the rest of this wonderful Sunday. There's a lot happening here in Atlanta. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. Go to WesMoss.com, WesMoss.com. The contact button upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. The prize line, by the way, 404-741-0750. Enjoy the rest of this wonderful Sunday. Go Falcons, rise up.